everybody. I'm so happy to be here at the annual Patients and Partners. This is my favorite conference. I'm so proud to be here. As a patient advocate and as a moderator for the patient keynote, I can remember being the patient a couple of years ago and being interviewed by the, you know, another patient. So to be able to sit here on the stage with you, Irizada, and to have you eloquently talk about the impact clinical research has had in your life and your story, I can't tell you what this means. I'm very proud, and thank you for honoring me with the privilege of being able to interview you. So,
oh, I want to thank you. Thank you, Kate, and thank you all for being the ears and allowing me to be the voice of many, many patients that have gone through this journey, and we all have a story to share. So thank you for listening.
So we talked last night over dinner. We got to know each other. It was the first time we had met in person. And I was trying my best not to ask too many questions because I wanted to save them for today. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of your amazing, unique, inspiring story, can you give us a little background, a little history of who you are and like your family and like where you come from and like just a little background history on who you
Me?
Are. Yes, you.
Family.
Yes.
Okay. Youngest of three, born and raised in Puerto Rico, mother of four, old kids already, grandma of one, married for the second time to my husband that was at the time medical director of a hospital in Miami, so you could imagine the little shocks that we had all throughout my treatment, whether I wanted to be my girl boss versus him wanting to be the all-over hovering helicopter caregiver. Let me see. I do have, besides my passion about advocacy, a global marketing job that I do also on my everyday. Having an empty nest also allows me to juggle all these both things at the same time. And I'm a talker, so I better shut up and live you up.
I understand. I totally appreciate you being a talker because it's all about you right now. You're like myself. One of the things that we have in common is that we both are cancer survivors. We both have been diagnosed. When were you diagnosed?
2017. It was October 2017. I had a very active life. And I decided to, you know, go one of my normal OBGYN checks, and there was a fibroid. I, as a girl boss, decided and told my doctor, I'm done having kids, I don't need anything else, take it all out. So whenever they went in, I woke up from anesthesia to find out that it was a 2B tumor that was never shown on any of the pre-screenings that were ever there. So that was a miracle that came into the life. Season one started that way. Radiation every day, chemo once a week with the cisplatin that goes into the boosting for the treatment. Body reacted very well to it, went on remission after 3.5 months of this, and went back to my normal life. Then 11 months after, season two came up. I had an asthma attack that I had never gone through that before. And I'm like, you know, this should be the construction or remodelers in the office.
Okay.
And my boss, whose mom had been a patient for breast cancer,
okay,
she said, I'm not taking that. You need to take care. Go and play it safe. So I go to the pneumologist, and there were all these little spots on my lung. So we started monitoring them for 30 days and they doubled the size. And they said we need to go in to do how do you call that? The little needle that goes and punctures and gets
the biopsy.
The biopsy. And I said, if you're gonna puncture, you better open because I'm not gonna go through what happened first, that it does not happen there. So you better go find out, and if there's something, take it out. So we needed to regulate my breathing, and because it kept limiting my capacity. I went to surgery, they opened, and they first of all found out that what happened to be in the, or appeared to be in the upper lobe, it was really on the lower lobe. So thank God we didn't do the biopsy and we just went straight to that. They removed, and the anxious moments came in because we didn't know if it was a new cancer or if it was a metastasis. And it came out, I am not a lung cancer patient.
Okay.
I am a GYN cancer patient whose cancer metastasized to the lung, which was bad news.
Okay, so you've got your diagnosis, it's metastasized. At that point, had you had heard about clinical research? Had anybody talked to you about it? Did you have any perceptions about it? Or were you just thinking, I just want to stay alive?
I had heard about those before. You know, having family and husbands in the medical area, mm-hmm. we know about that. So I decided to take care of my season two treatment, and I told my husband and my previous doctors, ta-ta. I chose my doctors where I knew research would be conducted. So that was my main course.
Okay.
And I go knock on the door of the doctor. He's like, here's my PD-L1. I'm 100%. Give me immunotherapy. And he said, oh, no. You have to go through the whole protocol. So here's your batch of chemos that you're going to have before. And I'm like, but this has been proven. You know, this could save my life. He's like, no, we can't do that. So go into chemo. 6.5 hours later of long, awful chemos. And by the second one, the cancer kept spreading. And that's when my doctor said, oh, oops. And I said, you owe me a wig.
Okay, that was a good positive spin on it, and that was a good way to look at it. But when you think about what your options were going to be at that time, was it a difficult choice to make? Who did you make the decision with? Was it a team effort, or was it just you going off of what you had known and what you had researched?
Oh, that was rough.
Mm-hmm.
That was very rough.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it was shown that, or it was presented that immunotherapy, in that case, Pembro, it was the last resource. If nothing else happens, then you're going to go to this to see if it happens. So you get nothing to lose. But remember, this is what the doctor said, once you start here, there's no going back to chemo. So it was, it took me like 2 months to weigh everything down, sitting with my kids, sitting with my husband, doing like the SWOT analysis of what are the pros and cons of going through that. And then at the end, it was like, either way, it's gonna extend a little bit further the life, let's just try it. And then by the quality of life that chemo was giving me, mm-hmm. just the fact that I'm doing something and getting away from that sense of feeling awful would made me take the decision too.
So what was the result, the immediate result of you choosing immunotherapy? What happened?
By the second round, the tumors that had already spread, I mean, we're talking about upper left lobe, mediastinum, pleura, they started reducing by the second infusion. It was every 3 weeks, it went through. By a year, I was totally NED.
I love that. Congratulations on being totally NED.
Thank you.
And it helps me with the next transition in regards to your treatment. So are you currently on treatment?
No.
Okay, so you're off treatment.
No, right. I got chosen to stop the treatment after 2 years because they want to see how long the effect lasts in the body.
Right. So when we talk about treatment, and this we discussed this last night briefly, there was one aspect of treatment that oftentimes is overlooked, and it's often, and I didn't reveal it to you, and I wanted to reveal it to you now. We often forget about the cost and trying to afford, right, the treatment, right? And so I can remember we discussed the fact that I was a social worker in Harlem, and I lost my job. It fired me, I think, 4 weeks before a family leave protection, and I had that COBRA payment I told you about. It was $600 a month, and I exhausted my savings, right? And we talked about how difficult that can be. And I can remember in New York State, I'm from New York City, they had this wonderful program, and it was Medicaid Service Treatment Program, and it covered breast, cervical, and prostate, and some other cancer. But when I thought about you, it wouldn't have covered lung cancer. It wouldn't have covered somebody who had pancreatic cancer. It wouldn't have covered somebody who had brain cancer. And so when I thought about it, I thought about the biggest difference, you know, in our story. When I was thinking about the totality, you know, we talk about affording health care, but it's like trying to afford health care. What has that been like for you? How has that affected you? Talk about that.
Oh, no. You're giving me red light, a green light over here. And okay. So the patient experience is very, very hard as when this journey starts with financial situations. We're going to start saying, first of all, my boss said, I think you should quit. You shouldn't put the company over this. No, I am protected by the law. And I'm just telling you because I am nice enough, but I'm not a, I don't really have to. So there are many things that happen economically that could be there, but you don't know until you are in dire straits, right? I started my journey with a $20,000 decrease of my pocket income because I needed to put $7,000 towards out-of-pocket for the insurance company. That's from start. I knew every year that would ever happen. And then on top of that, I needed to ease my experience because the clinical journey or the patient's journey, it's not just give me the infusion and that's it. You have neuropathies, you have your aches and ailments and pains and all these other things that could be eased off or prevented if you have a holistic care. So I had to budget for those that were never included through there. The massage therapy, lymphatic drainage. You have to go on top of that with, I did physical therapy because I didn't want the scar tissues and the pains from, I used to be falling all the time and losing my balance because of everything. So I had to be on physical therapy to strengthen all my core muscles and to be ready to prevent a fall. And those things would come out of pocket. That was over $10,000 in addition to that. So we're talking between your $10,000 plus for physical therapy care. You're taking about your $7,000 out of pocket, going in and out to the hospital almost every day and working around additional medications or over-the-counter stuff that you have to buy, creams because you get really, really dry-skinned, your mouth, your longines that you have to be booting all the time. Everything takes a toll. That $3,000 more into that, that's 20 from scratch. Is that fair? Is that real? Is that really budgeted into your day? Is that really taking a toll on your savings that you had for your life? Mm-hmm. Is that your vacations for the next 5 years that are going there? Is it fair for your children's college education to be lost in there? And regardless of your vulnerability, economical situation, you are facing a cutback. And facing a cutback, regardless that you are on whichever scale you are, on the tax bracket, yes, the cutback presents a moment where you decide to say, do I pay this or do I pay that?
And that's a difficult choice to make, and patients are already burdened with trying to stay alive, and that's not something.
And the stress.
Right, right.
Then, you know, I don't want to be stressed because stress actually triggers even more the illness.
I understand.
So whenever you see that, you say, why am I going to put somebody through that and just give them the choices afterwards? So, and this is where I go. We need high-quality health care, but it needs to be affordable at the same time.
Right. Like the program that I was in, I was lucky enough to get in. Again, I felt like it should be universal across the board for anyone who fell in the income bracket that couldn't afford the treatment. I was very lucky, and that was the one of the main differences in our story, and I wanted to highlight that, and I appreciate you for being so passionate and honest about that. Now let's transition a little to your advocacy in regards to lung cancer and clinical research. And I know we're running out of time. We're all down, almost down to 5 minutes. But what do you think, if you had to talk to pharma face-to-face, what would you say to them in regards to the patient experience and how it can be improved from the patient perspective, from everything that you went through? Because you've seen a lot. You've been through a lot.
First thing, thank you. Because research saved my life. Please keep doing this. I go to Washington, D.C., and I advocate to get more funds for NIH so you can actually get more resources and do that. That's one of my key when I go there. It's like, make it affordable and let them do more research because we need more lives to be saved. So I say thank you, as I said, but at the same time, I know it takes a lot for you to develop these drugs and to market these drugs and to make them happen. But we, and I know it's a business and you need profit as well, but we also need access. We also need support. So we need to work together and find ways to provide these solutions, these cures to patients, to enhance their journey and to create programs that don't just cure but give stress, but to make a smoother process throughout and then long-term results for the future.
Do you think your advocacy has been receptive, have been received well on Capitol Hill?
For the past 2 years or so, I think so. I mean, whenever we look after we do the advocacy days and we do the takeovers, so far our results have been, even last year that was not an election year, we had good results on what we were advocating for. And we do it not just American Lung Association, but we are 5, 7, or 8, or 10 organizations that go at the same time, and we align our words and we advocate for it. This year, I'm not there because I chose to be here with you guys. But my peers are there, and I pray that the results will actually be the same.
All right, and let's transition lastly to the patient, because everything always ends with us. And there may be a patient who may be listening to this because it's being recorded. What advice would you have them in regards to when they are first diagnosed and they're trying to figure out, you know, and compartmentalize the important things that they may not think are important when it comes to their treatment plan, because there's so much, there's so many valuable takeaways from your experience in regards to affordable health care, in regards to advocacy. What would you tell a patient?
Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to raise your voice and say what is working for you and what is not working for you. Don't be afraid the doctor will say, it's okay, don't worry, you're gonna be fine, because you're not. Because on your point right now, I respect the way you feel, and you have the right to let them know how you feel. And at the end of the day, there's always ways, and it's one day at a time. Let's not worry about 3 years from now, 2 years from now. Right now, the focus on the center is now.
Do you have any hope for change in regards to the patient voice? And do you think there are any key, you know, I guess I'd say, like motivational, inspirational words that you have for patients who want to be involved in advocacy the way that you do, but aren't sure how to go about it?
I'm sorry. That's my English is really crazy
here. No, it's okay. So, what would you tell another patient who wanted to be involved in advocacy the way in which you do it, because you do it so well?
Advocacy goes different ways. There is the one that you go on the Hill, there's the one that you do over here, and there's the one that you do on grassroots, talking to other patients, support groups. You give the message to other people that can actually leverage the voice, and after you start in your grassroots, your message will actually continue to reach these points, while we over here are actually pushing down the same message so we can actually push forward. And the more they advocate, the more they talk, even on the grassroots levels, the more their voice echoes, and actually you're gonna start, if they want to be more included and more involved. Right. But it all starts one step at a time.
Because you gotta start somewhere.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing your story. It is so powerful and so inspirational. And I think it'll have a great impact on others who are trying to do the same valuable work that you're trying to do. Thank you for allowing me to interview you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you.